National Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
This is Tony Straka from Lansdale, Pennsylvania. The International Radio Report presents 30 minutes of news, information, and commentary on developments in the world of radio every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at ckut.ca.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report for Sunday, November the 27th. We thank you for tuning in. My name is Sheldon. I'm here with Jill. And we have 30 minutes of news and information, as usual, for you from the world of radio. If you would like to get in touch with us, our email address is radioreport@yahoo.com. Our program is live streaming and archived at ckut.ca. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report, we welcome four new members this week, Andy, Aaron, Richard, and Jenny. That brings us to 863. We invite you to go and join the group. Lots of information on the Facebook group that we don't talk about on the show due to having only 30 minutes, so you'll find a lot more material there, as well as the stories that we do cover on the show itself. And if you miss the show or prefer to listen to it at your convenience, our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@IRR. And we have 740 subscribers there. You can subscribe and receive notices each time a new show is posted up there for you. And we apologize for the breakdown in the audio at CKUT last week. We thank those people who did get in touch with us. Out of our control, though, something going on in downtown Montreal, it was affecting the system at CKUT. So if that happens, and it does from time to time where you have a problem on the station, we really recommend going to the YouTube channel. The programs are up there usually within half an hour or so after the program airs on the radio. So that is a very convenient and pretty reliable way for you to get the show. So, all right, we have a couple interesting stories that sort of tie into each other today to start things off with. And the first one comes to us, an article by Randy Stein in Radio World. Wireless electronic vehicle charging could pose threat to AM reception. Consumers are eager to cut the cord on their electronics charging devices, a trend that could soon benefit drivers of electric vehicles or EVs. HD radio developer and licensing company Xperi is seeking to raise awareness about a potential new threat to AM radio broadcast reception. The proposed introduction of wireless power transfer systems for electric vehicle charging, or WPT-EV, that use switching frequencies that generate harmonics in the lower AM band. Xperi recently filed comments about this concern in response to a notice of inquiry at the FCC about radio receiver performance. It hopes to raise awareness and also believes its HD radio technology can be of help. Interference to AM from unintentional radiators, including low-cost switching power supplies in EVs, is a concern, even before the question of wireless charging comes into the discussion. EV sales are rising across the globe, and the United States has set a lofty goal that half of new vehicles sold are to be electric by 2030, according to the National Association of Broadcasters. With that comes growing concern over noise on the AM band in EVs. The electromagnetic interference from EV motors to AM radio signals is well established, and some car makers have paired AM radio from dashboards because of concerns over audio quality. This topic has been heavily discussed within the ITU, or the International Telecommunications Union, as WPT EV engineers design more efficient ways to transmit power. The increase in AM band noise floors can be expected to continue. The ITU noted the frequencies expected to be used for WPT for electric vehicle charging could affect a large number of radio services. The impact can be on the same frequency, adjacent frequencies, or frequencies with larger separations, the ITU said. They also wrote that WPT EV is expected to produce harmonics in the bands 148.5 to 283.5 kilohertz, 525 to 1705 kilohertz, which is the AM broadcast band, and 2300 to 26,100 kilohertz, which is basically the whole shortwave spectrum, and can interfere with the reception of low frequency, medium frequency, and HF sound broadcasting. So some pretty serious issues headed our way.
And we have a related story here. The FCC commissioner that advocates for preservation of AM radio by L. Karras from Radio World. FCC commissioner Nathan Symington met with members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting during their 79th annual convention on November 16th. In his remarks, Symington emphasized the importance of AM radio and outlined the steps needed to ensure its future in a changing market. Symington began his remarks with a more personal anecdote. He said he grew up on a farm in Saskatchewan, Canada, where besides the trade papers, there was no media institution more trusted to inform us about all we needed to know than AM radio. AM radio was for us then, and is for the more than 3 million farmers across the U.S. now, a indispensable resource, he said. Symington said AM radio is the essential spine of the emergency alert system and lets you know what's happening, not just globally, but locally. From school closures and traffic delays to city council and county management meetings and high school sports games. He comments on the growing populations that view AM radio as dead and outdated technology and why he believes that to be a falsity. They say that the commission should reallocate the band to a different use. Well, okay, let's play that out. A dead technology? Don't tell farmers that. Most farmers listen to AM radio. Symington said 3/4 of farmers listen to radio 5 days per week, with more than 60% listening to the AM sources. He said because a lot of important emergency signaling infrastructure is built into it, not to mention that it remains the trusted source for farmers, it's important to preserve AM radio, Symington said. The industry can do that by not crushing radio with regulatory fees. Symington said broadcasters can also help preserve AM radio by encouraging auto manufacturers to double down on AM reception, especially as the market changes with the rise of electric vehicles. Finally, he urges the FCC to have a critical look at AM radio reception on a technical level. You know what shows up here? Because they're talking about farms, and we might be thinking, okay, but what's different? Well, typically, farms are usually further away from cities and further away from, you know, standard FM broadcasts. And AM has this very particular importance in how a signal goes far away. So you can be quite far from the transmitting station, but still be able to receive it. And the problem is, you know, we see that now there's all of these noise sources that are popping up. Already as shortwave listeners, and even you, Sheldon, as medium wave DXer that you like to do regularly, the noise is getting higher and higher every single year. And in those frequencies, it's extremely sensitive to that. And we're losing some of that ground. They were saying in the first article we were reading about, you know, even shortwave being affected by wireless charging. I mean, as a radio listener for 40 years, that noise has been creeping up slowly. And year after year, it's becoming worse. And there's something that needs to be done here about that.
Yeah, and it is definitely the big cities, especially, where we're getting this increase in volume of vehicles and other types of devices that are creating this interference. We've got a friend here in the Montreal area, Gilles Michaud, who lives in Laval, north of Montreal, in an incredibly noisy area. Yet he's tuning into an online receiver that's just, 40 kilometers away from him, but out from the big city.
Yep.
And there alone, he's hearing all sorts of things that he could not possibly hear in his home location. So, we're living in this ever-increasing bubble of noise. And with all these new technologies that they're talking about, not only the AM band, but it's going to extend its way up through the HF radio spectrum. And that means shortwave listeners, ham radio operators, everything going on in those frequency ranges could be affected. And, going back to the first story, we're seeing that already, and we've covered stories about this where a lot of car manufacturers are just saying, let's not put the AM in the radio because we know it's going to be a problem and people are going to complain about it. So let's just not bother putting it there. But I don't think they're only looking at it from a level of noise. They're not looking at it from a user level, I don't think.
There's a lack of understanding of how important AM signals on those frequencies can propagate. And the problem is, if you don't put AM radios anymore in cars, and we see a lot of them also online, I can see portable receivers that have only FM on it. If you actually sell those radios, which means a lot of people are going to think, there's no AM anymore in a lot of the radios that are being sold, so why are we maintaining AM radio stations on the air? Everything's happening on FM now, but there's a big difference. FM goes a certain distance. It can go a good distance, but AM covers huge areas, and it has an importance because of that property of one single transmitter capable of reaching hundreds of kilometers in distance, and even at night, thousands of kilometers in distance, which you will not see on FM in general.
We saw that in Norway, one of the countries that was dropping all of their analog services and going to HD radio and what have you, digital radio signals. And, a country with a large fishing fleet that's kilometers away from the country itself, they were over the curve. So the line of sight signal was not getting to them. And fishermen, for example, were relying on long wave and medium wave radio stations to get their information, weather and what have you. They finally realized, let's hang on a second here. Let's step back a bit and see just who's being affected by these changes. Yeah, the sound is better, but if you can't hear the signal, what's the difference? You need to be able to hear something.
One of the interesting things on the first article is about also Xperi that says maybe HD radio can play a role in here. Unfortunately, we don't have AM stations in HD in Montreal, because I'd be curious to try what is the level of reception needed to actually trigger a HD audio to go through. If it's well done, I would think that maybe it could actually help out, definitely. One thing for sure is that when it's in HD, you don't hear that static anymore. So, but how good is it to go through the noise? That's the question here. They seem to say that could be helpful, but also at the same time, we got to think about the fact that we still need analog.
We're heading towards a real dangerous catch-22, though, I think. We've seen radio owners, the big companies that own radio stations, a lot of them phasing out their AM stations, going to FM. It costs more to run AM. So if they're looking to save money, and then if manufacturers of the electronic cars are coming out with radios that don't have AM on them, then those companies are going to say, well, makes sense. Why don't we, you know, get rid of our AM and just go to FM if people can't get to our signal anyways? So you get that vicious circle going, and you know, who's going to win out? Well, and I think they're just looking for an easy out. And if they say, well, you know, look how many AM stations have disappeared, people can live without it. It's a tricky situation that we're facing, and it's sort of all coming together all at once. Look what we recently saw in Florida with the hurricanes, though. The stations that were putting out the news and information for people because their FM transmitting antennas were down, or their, you know, people couldn't get stuff on the internet or what have you, they were finding, some people actually reported that, we found your AM radio station, because those stations were on the air and putting out the information that people needed. So I'm glad to see that at least the FCC commissioner is stepping up here and advocating the preservation of AM radio. So we'll see who wins out.
Yep. So what's happening with our sun? Well, it's rather quiet this week. We've got only a few sunspot groups on the surface, nothing amazing, nothing, you know, flaring. It's very, very quiet. Conditions were a little down. I saw that the solar flux is getting close to 100, which is kind of a threshold in propagation here. So hopefully the sun will pick up at some point. There is apparently a very big sunspot on the other side of the sun that they could see. So maybe that will show up in the next week and we could see changing conditions. But right now, sunspot number is 61, the solar flux 110. Nothing much happening in terms of disturbances. There's no coronal holes. So the week ahead seems to be quiet once again. The best way, of course, to see the conditions on the bands, of course, will be to turn on a radio and listen.
This is Rita Barrett from Harleysville, Pennsylvania. You're listening to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
So talking of space weather, we have a interesting story from the Washington Post about satellites that were lost because of some space weather activity, huge impacts on satellite launches.
This news story was written by Aaron Blakemore. Loss of 38 satellites prompts call for better space weather forecasts. When SpaceX launched 49 Starlink communication satellites into low orbit in February, the goal was to connect remote locations on Earth to the Internet. But a space storm dashed those plans, causing 38 of the satellites to fail and costing the commercial space company millions. Now, scientists are calling for better space weather alerts to prevent similar commercial space disasters. In a study published in the journal Space Weather, researchers from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Space Weather Prediction Center and SpaceX explain how weather on the sun made such a big impact 93 million miles away. Space weather affects Earth thanks to the magnetic field that forms a shield between Earth and space. That magnetosphere is regularly buffeted by winds, flares, mass ejections, and particles emitted by the sun, causing disturbances known as geomagnetic storms. These storms are responsible for phenomena such as the aurora borealis, or northern lights. They can also wreak havoc on GPS systems, power transmissions, and satellite communications. Although the February storm was relatively minor, it caused a disturbance in Earth's upper atmosphere that produced significant drag and made it impossible for the satellites to begin their orbit-raising maneuvers, the researchers write. Instead of reaching orbit, the satellites fell toward Earth, burning up as they re-entered its atmosphere. The Space Weather Prediction Center does not produce specific warnings about satellite drag or variations in atmospheric density for commercial satellite launches. Both factors can keep satellites from reaching orbit, and in a worst-case scenario, could cause them to collide with space junk and other objects orbiting Earth. In the paper in Space Weather, the scientists recommend stronger forecasting and alert systems while highlighting gaps in space physics that could affect prediction accuracy. This information will certainly become essential when dealing with space traffic coordination in an increasingly crowded space environment, they write. In the future, the scientists say, they'll upgrade their models and begin providing new alerts. Space weather will ebb and flow, the study suggests, but public-private cooperation must remain a priority to prevent further losses.
So as they are saying in the article, it's interesting to see that they send out satellites and not really checking the solar activity because it impacts those launches. You know, when there's a solar flare and there's a lot of geomagnetic activity, the Earth's atmosphere actually will expand slightly because it's heated up. And that expansion makes those satellites drag a lot more. And so in this case, these satellites are launched in a lower orbit first. So they are probably a lot more in the way of drag when there is that solar wind happening and the expansion of the atmosphere. And I think they're going to have to take care of watching maybe the space weather a little more and know what's happening.
It shocks me that, you know, they have the technical people and the scientific people who know how to get these things up in the air and know what to do with them. But how could they not know about the effects that solar conditions will have? I mean, some people have asked us, why do we put these solar weather reports on our show? But they have a dramatic impact on what we do as radio listeners. But you would just think that these people should have known about these reports, these forecasts. They're asking for better weather forecasts in the article. The amount of information that's put out through how many different sources. I mean, just look at our site that we use, spaceweather.com. Mm-hmm. There's so much information there that the average person's not going to understand, but you would think that these people that are putting these satellites up there should be understanding this stuff.
There is one part that is true in the article, though, is that the amount of times we see solar reports where we'll have solar flares and possible impacts of the coronal mass ejections, and it just doesn't happen. Yeah, definitely we probably need to find a way to understand, is this going to hit Earth or not? Right now, it seems to be more like we think it is, but we're not sure. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That definitely can be very, very important. And even in the future, you know, we're talking about when the U.S. went to the moon. Back in the day, they weren't really thinking much about that. But in some of the missions, there were some close calls. There were some huge solar flares that happened in between the missions to the moon. And later on, they noticed that, you know, if one of those big solar flares had happened while they were on the moon, well, they are not protected there. And they said they would possibly could have died from radiation poisoning. So it impacts a lot of what we do, space satellites and space exploration. So there definitely needs to be more study done in understanding the sun, that's for sure.
Yeah, of course, once they get the satellites up there, there's not a whole lot they can do, you know, if something does happen. But at least, you know, don't launch something in the middle of one of these things or whatever, you know, just in case. But yeah, a lot more coordination needs to go into put into place so that everyone understands just how important it is to monitor what that sun is up to.
Yeah, and even older satellites, there's been a lot of satellites that fell back to Earth earlier than expected after years of being in space because solar activity was higher than expected. So the drag was higher and the satellite's life was shorter.
Yep, a lot going on up there that people need to understand. For us, hey, it affects our radio and we get annoyed when we can't hear what we want to hear, but there's a lot more potential dangers going on out there that that these people need to learn about. We move next to a story out of Holland. The headline, Radio Veronica fined for talking too much. Lucky you're not on Radio Veronica, because with your long YouTube shows, you'd be getting a fine every week, I think. But this comes from a news service called Poddle News, which doesn't like to tell you exactly who they are, but we did find other sources for this story, one in particular out of the Netherlands. Radio Veronica has been fined because the DJs talk too much and don't broadcast enough music. The owner, Talpa, has lodged an objection against the penalty of up to 60,000 euros per month. Radio Veronica has had a so-called stipulated license since 2003. On this basis, the radio station must broadcast music 85% of the time between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. every day. The Agency for Telecom, which issues the permits, concluded that Radio Veronica does not comply with this. It investigated after a complaint from KINK, which itself is aiming for an FM frequency in the new distribution of 2023. Veronica has to pay that penalty, said a spokesman for Radio Communications Agency. Initially, this is now 60,000 euros, but that amount can now raise to 60,000 euros per month. According to a spokesperson, Veronica proposed the percentage of 85% music itself when it wanted to get an FM frequency at the time. This was subsequently included in the permit. If a station does not adhere to that percentage, this will lead to distortion of competition with radio stations such as Radio 538, Q Music, and Sky Radio. These channels are free in the ratio between music and spoken word. A spokesperson for Talpa Network said that Radio Veronica has objected to the proposed sanction. According to their calculation, we are not complying with the rules of our clause. We do not agree with this. The Radio Telecommunications Agency is now handling the case. Talpa Network had previously appealed against the redistribution of FM frequencies for commercial radio stations. The verdict in that case is on December the 13th. It is not yet known whether the Minister of Economic Affairs, Mikki Andreasson, has included strict rules that radio stations must adhere to in her plans for a new FM distribution. So they asked for it, they got what they asked for, and now they're being told that you're not doing what you asked for.
This is so funny. It's like, what, you're going to put in ads and say, well, we're looking for a DJ that doesn't like to talk.
Yeah. Well, they need to be like some of those commercial FM stations that we have here where there aren't any DJs, or they have one who does a voice track for, you know, for 20 minutes a day or whatever. So, pretty strange.
Pretty strange.
We'll see what comes of all of that.
So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
If you're a CW operator, you could be very active next weekend because there are three CW contests coming up. The ARRL 160-meter band CW contest, 2200 Zulu December 2nd to 1600 Zulu December the 4th. That's organized by the American Radio Relay League. The objective is for amateurs worldwide to exchange information with W and VE amateurs on the 160-meter band. It will be a CW only, and you'll need some pretty good antennas for that contest.
There's the Wake Up QRP Sprint, 0600 Zulu to 0800 Zulu, December 3rd, organized by the Russian QRP Club. Power no more than 5 watts, bands 40 and 20 meters, and it's CW only.
And there is the Pro CW Contest, 1200 Zulu December 3rd to 1159 Zulu December 4th. That's organized by the Pro CW Contest Club of Romania. It is 80 through 10 meters, and as we said, CW only.
And there's the FT Roundup, 1800 Zulu December 3rd to 2359 Zulu December 4th, organized by the RTTYContesting.com group. Objectives, amateur worldwide contact and exchange QSO information with other amateurs on the modes of FD4 or FD8. Bands are 10, 15, 20, 40, and 80 meters. That could be one for me, actually, on FD4, FD8. I've been doing a lot of it lately.
Okay, so there's the four contests for you this weekend. We hope you have some fun with those if you're into contesting. CW seems to be popular for these contests, so a lot of those popping up over the weeks.
Yeah, especially with the QRP low power.
Yeah. So that's it for us this week. Have a good week. We will speak to you again next Sunday morning with our next edition of the International Radio Report here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Service of Radio Mongolia.